The light, to me, is how stunning the city is.
The Minster, the river, walking my dog on the racecourse, and the surrounding countryside and proximity to the sea.
I can hear the owls in the park next door. I often see deer when I'm like running.
The floodplains and flood meadows are incredibly special environments. So many people put so much time into looking after
people cycling around and walking and green, positive spaces like that that make people feel good.
It's a really beautiful place to live. And the history that it's managed to preserve, I think it is amazing.
Our awe-inspiring architecture and projects that encourage us to revisit old places with a new perspective.
So much work is put into caring for these old buildings and these old streets, and it's all with the intention of it being preserved for future generations.
The culture, I think, offers huge amounts of opportunity for people.
We've managed to do many wonderful things.
I'm also part of a choir here, and this, I get so much light from it, and the people are beautiful.
The York residents have been very welcoming towards me as a non-native, let's say. It's a beautiful thing.
We go to the Minster on Christmas Eve, and it's like a tradition, and it's really beautiful, and they light candles all around. There's something, yeah, really magical and traditional and quite nostalgic about the city at Christmas.
We don't suffer from typical big city problems, and it does allow a certain protection to focus on work and community and social life.
People end up quite interconnected. It means that there's a quite a secure network.
I've heard somewhere that York has like the densest number of civic societies or civic trusts of any city in the UK.
Lots of innovation, lots of great ideas, a place to live.
Different organisations that are there to help people and really build a feel of the community.
We celebrate love and connection in all of its forms. Places like the York Pride, the Refugee Week, the Black History Month, Disability Pride. There's something going on every single month.
It's the two universities that I think attract amazing talent, or just the fact that York is positioned in kind of great kind of connections to other parts of the country, make it such a desirable place to live. And also the pockets of innovation and creativity. There are so many independent businesses in York, and I really love that.
I bloody love living here. Our car broke down. We've got this Corsa that we've had for as long as me and Ricky have been together. And it broke down when we were getting a Christmas tree. But in the end, the Christmas tree people, they were like, don't worry, we'll sort this out. They had kids come out pushing the car to like get the engine running. But there's a lot of light here.
I know many cities attract amazing talent, but I've met so many people in the last few years that have chosen to move to York, and the kind of people that seem to be moving here have been such interesting and diverse people.
So much of how we characterise ourselves as people as being very welcoming and friendly and very chatty is the dark underside of that is that we are more likely to welcome some people over others. We talk about, you know, the green spaces and these gorgeous special environments around the city. Like, who gets to enjoy those spaces? And do they have to enjoy them in a certain way in order for them to be welcome?
The city is very much a complacent place that's relying on its morals and reputation.
The book has a sort of sense of almost being smug and self-satisfied.
My kids growing up here are quite naive to the world because it is such a lovely place.
Darkness comes out of apathy. We are perhaps blind to our lack of diversity. You know, it causes problems for those people who are not already within the community and aren't that comfortable asking because they see themselves as other and different.
There's a closeness here, which is kind of like a paradox because also I've never met people that are so open and generous at the same time.
If you fit into the mainstream, you do pretty well here. But if you don't, then I think it can be quite a difficult place to live.
There's a lot of NIMBYism in York as well, and the lack of want to change and to develop. many of York residents want to keep it in the past. You know, will eventually just turn into a huge theme park if we're not careful.
It does feel like York is designed for tourism.
I feel like I'm in a TikTok video quite a lot of the time with beige and cream, and anything that doesn't fit with that aesthetic is kind of pushed out of the frame.
It can feel like York residents aren't always the audience for people making decisions about York.
When our predominant industries are hospitality, tourism, retail, the income for the people working in those sectors aren't particularly high.
There's a lot of York residents who can't actually afford to live in York.
A city whose rental prices are extortionate.
People are really struggling. There's damp on people's walls that they can't afford to like get fixed. People are talking about mortgage repayments all of the time.
A lot of struggles that people face, for example, not understanding addiction and drug use, things like that create isolation for people and anger.
You know, when I walk around York and I see the empty shops and the shutters, you know, when I first moved to York, yeah, don't get wrong, but compared to it now, nowhere close. We're not looking after our vulnerable people. York is not a poor city, and yet parts of it are starting to look very poor.
Poverty, which is grinding in parts of the city, upsets me every time to this day.
I see the dark in York, in our doorways and our alleyways, where our homeless and addicted beg for change. And the dystopian look of some parts of our once vibrant and busy town centre. I see violence and thefts and antisocial behaviour in our city centre, and resources to tackle it diminishing. It clash with the visitors and the revellers. I see it in the minds of those who take their lives in our rivers and on our railways. People who don't know how to share and articulate the struggle and the challenge and the future that they deserve.
There's a poem by Maggie Smith, and she says, "We talk so much of light, please let me speak on behalf of the good dark. Let us talk more of how dark the beginning of a day is." I think, in fact, so much the clue of the darkness of York is hidden in what we really care about and what the light is as well.
There are people that want to change it. There are people that want to change it. There are people that have hope. There are people that have been in the gutter themselves and want to help pull others out into the sunshine, onto the dry land. Listen to them, see what solutions they can come up with. York can be great. York has been great. York can be great again. But it needs the right people to help, and it needs to be listened to by the right people. I was an active addict for many years, and it took away everything and everyone that I loved. It made me into a person that not just my loved ones didn't recognise, but that I didn't recognise. I was almost like a feral creature scrabbling around. However, in coming out the other side of that addiction, in working on my recovery, on working on myself, it showed me strength that I didn't know that I have.
I was about 9, I think. She was at a rally, and this gentleman, who I later worked out was an MP, he collapsed, clutching his chest. And my mother dropped her spanner and ran over, just to sit on the wall, and ran over to give him CPR, bent down, and was about to start giving him CPR when his wife rushed over and ripped my mother back and said, "We'd rather die than have your gypsy lips anywhere near him." And that just made me realise how much some people hate us without any real provocation or knowledge, that they would rather die often have assistance from us.
We lost my nephew very suddenly when he was 10 years old. And then the next year we lost my mum very suddenly. Then in 2017, yeah, my partner passed away in my bed. I woke up to him and, yeah, he died during the night. It's weird. None of these things at the time snapped me into this realisation of life is worth living and life is beautiful and life is wonderful. In fact, it's taken years for a lot of the messages to come through. I'm not going to say I live life to the fullest every day and every day is a blessing, because every day is not a blessing and I don't live life to the fullest. However, I have more gratitude for the people that I have around me. Yeah, I try and be there for those people, to be a giver rather than a taker. Wouldn't go as far as to say it's made me a better person, but yes, it's part of what has made me who I am today.
With everyone dying in my family before 38, having a heart attack at 46, being told I had less than a month to live, having a quadruple heart bypass, which is now 19 years old. And that's changed, I suppose, my whole perspective growing up as a child, but into all we have is now. And therefore living hard, loving hard, packing it in like fury.
I am disabled. That requires a lot of self-advocating, and also just sort of naturally, I guess. More generally, I advocate on behalf of other people. I'm also queer as well as being disabled, and that is very isolating. It can isolate you from the community of peers. That's definitely something I have felt, and I have actively tried to put things in place so that other people don't feel that so much.
All my family were sort of miners or steel workers, hard-working individuals. And the stories of the older generations, pre-unions and pre-welfare state, were always that if you didn't work, you didn't eat, and you had to provide, and that was all I'd say. I sort of grew up with that as a sense. And then in the 80s, when the recession hit, the misery that I saw from that was terrible, and that sort of spurred me on to work hard and to make sure that I was always okay, but that I could survive, but also that producing a strong economy and a good economy gave people a chance.
Lots of people say my parents made me who I am today. I think really I need to specify that they, at a very young age, they taught me how to learn, and so that meant that right from the get-go, I had an advantage over the other students, and so I found it easier, and that was an incredible privilege.
I came here to study at the Uni of York. I think like a lot of 18-year-olds, I was so excited to learn everything. I wanted to go and study so that I would feel a bit more equipped to grow up in a very confusing and rapidly changing world, and I now realise after a couple of years after this experience that of course the most important thing I could have learned in that experience was that exactly that, it's a very complicated and rapidly changing world, and there are very few individual studies or disciplines I could possibly have devoted myself to that would have given me all the answers to that.
New York is something else that's made me who I am today. Friends, in particular the family, feeling that connection with or the need to try and make the world a better place that was already there, but kind of brings it to a focus.
Going to a primary school in London, in North London. It wasn't a fancy school. In fact, probably it's a school that some people might not want to send their kids to. But it was a school where I met my best friends, and they're still my best friends, where I fell in love with learning. It was a school where I did dance routines to Destiny's Child in the concrete playground, and it taught me love.
When I was a kid, messed up a bit, so that set me on a life path that was quite different to how it could have been otherwise, but actually that's offered me opportunities and made me meet people that I would never have met if I hadn't.
It's too easy to think of people as who don't hold similar or any of the same views to kind of almost isolate ourselves from those. Conversation is a good thing. Speaking to people that disagree with you is a good thing. Trying to convince people of things and not surround yourself just by people that think the same thing.
My parents sort of made sure that I had everything that I needed, though that they didn't have a lot of money. It sort of taught me that time and experience holds more value than money. Now, in reflection as an adult, the importance of being responsible and being able to make sure that, you know, you're not living in fear of, let's say, bailiffs coming round, because that was an experience when I let them in as a child, which I didn't understand then. But as an adult, I can understand the fear around that. And then the importance of acknowledging what privileges I have, listening to people, giving people time to heal, and acknowledging that people can make positive changes with the right support and help to live a fulfilled life.
In the miners' strike, I was asked to help pack boxes for people who needed support in the village. And I remember being really little, and it was Christmas time, asking why all of these families were getting these presents. I just remember really vividly being told that it was for families whose parents, whose fathers were striking. I didn't really know what that meant, but, you know, looking back, I think the sense of community where I grew up, solidarity and people striking for what they believed was really important for their futures and their future generations, even though it meant that they were in poverty.
I was marooned on a desert island 28 days. There was 13 of us actually, and all we had was the clothes we were stood up and a few knives and a day's worth of water. And we managed to survive catching fish, crocodiles, sharks, stingrays, pelicans, foraging for figs. And there was everybody there, from retired policemen, farmer, camera crew. There was a hairdresser, factory worker, you name it. There was a doctor. He taught me that not to take anything for granted ever again. Turning on of a tap and buying of some food, family. And I think over the years it's grown even more profound as I still cast my mind back to those simpler times and suddenly realise what's important in life.
Yeah, I left in a position where I didn't actually feel there was any point in continuing with life, and it took a really, really dark rock bottom time to get me to turn my life around and sort of focus on something just positive to move myself forward. Been many, many, many things over the years, and many exuberant and fantastic things, but the wholesomeness of being a dad and having kids looking towards me for help, advice and things like that has helped me kind of shape who I am as a person, sort of maybe define who I am as a person more or clearer.
The kind of experience that I felt is kind of most profound that I've had is that of becoming a mother. It's taught me so much about self-sacrifice, selfless love, tests and growth. And I think it's shaped a lot of my views now on what I value in life and how I would kind of like the world to evolve for this kind of future generation.
And as I approached the reality of parenthood, I sort of broke a little bit. I didn't know how to vocalise what I was going through. I felt ashamed. I recognised that I couldn't parent on someone else's terms and the way that I'd been living. And that in itself led me to the work that I do today with mentalness and my volunteering and this, you know, what I'm doing right now. As strange as this feels, talking to a phone line, you know, this is something I wouldn't have tried to do, never mind being successful at getting on to. So often we keep to ourselves what we dream might be possible or what is holding us back, you know, and in doing that we don't ever really get to interact with it or disagree with it or learn from it or grow from it. And so I believe that people need to say it out loud, and or on, you know, on paper. They need to believe in the power of each other's potential, you know, for growth. And we need to lean on each other sometimes, and gain each other's experience, pack our own stuff, and hold space for our fellow humans.